going to continue on in the series Set the Child Free, which, again, to belabor the point, is a book that I've been working on for about 2 decades. And I've had a couple people that have really helped to push me along and finally get this stuff done. And some of it, I think, had to do, you know, why it's taken so long. Some of it is that I had to go through these things. You know, I was given the vision some 20-odd years ago to write this book, and it's been a process within me. Along the way, I've been able to talk with people about certain aspects and help and bring healing, and they've been a real encouragement in bringing it about. But the book is Set the Child Free, and the impetus is from when Jesus was talking to the disciples, and he told them, he said, unless you change. Remember when some people brought a little child to Jesus and put him on his lap, and you know they were getting very upset. You know, the disciples were getting upset, going, hey, you shouldn't be messing with kids. What are you doing with kids? Because they were to be seen and not heard. But Jesus said, unless you change and become like a little child, you won't see or perceive or understand the kingdom of God. And so for you and I, we can take that to ourselves. You know, we've all grown up, we've all become mature, and you know, we've put away the childish things, which is what we should do. You put away the childish things. Yeah, I haven't really. But, you know, for those of you that know me, to try to cultivate a childlike character, personality, that's really what we've been called to do so that we can understand the kingdom of God. So just a brief overview of where we've been. We started out with creation in the garden when God created everything. And after the light, after the animals, after the plants, you know, he created all these things. Each time he said, he saw that it was good. Then on the sixth day, when he created man in his image, he looked and he said, he is very good. So for us, you know, we get the very good. The plants, the animals, everything else out there, they're just good. We're very good. So it's kind of like when Jesus, during the Transfiguration, and they heard the voice from heaven saying, this is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Jesus had not yet done anything as far as ministry goes, you know, but here he is. It wasn't the Transfiguration, it was something else. But anyway, he hadn't done anything yet, and he received this praise from his Heavenly Father. So we get that praise automatically without doing anything. After that, we looked at the fall. We looked at God's plan A was for us to live in the garden, to have everything before us. But there was that little thing called the fall when Adam and Eve disobeyed. Lucifer had put out his plan. Then we see plan B, where Jesus was going to be the provision. We looked at Moses and how he had been delivered as a little baby, because Satan's idea, you know, it says that your enemy, the devil, goes around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. And the predators always go after children first. They go after us as babies. They go after us as, he goes after us as young kids, as infants, as toddlers, as school kids. And Satan's attack is relentless. He goes about like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. And so we need to be wise as serpents and gentle as doves. We need to be watching around. But God gives us protection. There was an edict put out by Pharaoh to kill all the children, all the baby boys. And Moses was rescued and became the deliverer of a nation. He was the one that came and said to Pharaoh, let my people go. God says, let my people go. Then, several hundred years later, Jesus, the same thing. Herod comes out and he puts out an edict to kill all the boys, 2 years old and younger. And Jesus is spared when Joseph and Mary go down to Egypt. And Jesus comes back and he becomes the deliverer of the universe. Then we talked about the sins of the fathers, how our character, how some of the things that we have within us. Like if we're the child of an alcoholic, the propensity for us to become an alcoholic is greater. If we have been abused, the propensity for us to become an abuser is greater. All these different things. And we looked at Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, and how Abraham was a liar, and in turn his son Isaac had lied, and in turn, you know, on down the line. They had witnessed their father, and then they did the same. They did likewise. So this morning we come to, for me, and I think it's why I'm having a difficult time getting going here, is the most difficult aspect, the most difficult part of the story. This is the meat and potatoes. This is about the wounded child. And I'm going to use as a springboard here something that John Eldridge, I don't know how many of you have read Wild at Heart or you've heard of it, epic. I mean, he's got a number of books. He and his wife have written a number of books. And one of the things that John Eldridge talks about is the father wound. And I'm going to read a few quotes from Eldridge books. This one's from Wild at Heart. In fact, they're all from Wild at Heart. He says, "Every man carries a wound. I have never met a man without one. No matter how good your life may be, or no matter how good your life may have seemed to you, you live in a broken world full of broken people. Every boy in his journey to become a man takes an arrow in the center of his heart, in the place of his strength, because the wound is rarely discussed and even more rarely healed. Every man carries a wound, and the wound is nearly always given by his father." Just because Eldridge talks about, he's talking about the father wound to the man, to the boy, women are wounded too, right? Women experience the same kind of wounding. So just that's going on in here. I'm thinking about you. And in order to understand how a man receives a wound, you must understand the central truth of a boy's journey to manhood. Masculinity is bestowed. A boy learns who he is and what he's got from a man or the company of men. He cannot learn it any other place. He cannot learn it from other boys, and he cannot learn it from the world of women. Life needs a man to be fierce and fiercely devoted. The wounds he will take throughout his life will cause him to lose heart if all he has been trained to do is to be soft. A wound that goes unacknowledged and unwept is a wound that cannot heal. Father, I thank you for this time that we have this morning to look at the wounded child. And each one of us in some way, shape, or form have been a victim of a wounding. And that's the sole reason why you came. We are broken people who live in a world full of broken people. Holy Spirit, I ask that you would come and bring your healing oil, your healing ointment, and touch our hearts this morning. I pray, Holy Spirit, that you would go as deep as you need to, but that there would be a hedge of protection around each one of us as maybe we think about some things. Now, just because Eldridge talks about the father wound, that doesn't mean there isn't a mother wound. You know, you've been wounded by your father in some way, shape, or form, or and let me get into the towards the end just a little bit to clarify. The wounding can be a mental abuse. You know, it can be psychological, it can be spiritual, you were spiritually abused, it can be physical, emotionally, sexual. There's many different kinds of abuse, that maltreatment that we can suffer. And we've seen a lot of it. Some of us may have experienced a lot of that stuff in one way, shape, or form. And it doesn't just come from fathers, it can come from mothers, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, cousins, family, friends, complete and total strangers, teachers. You know, all we do, you know, you turn on the news and you hear about these things. You can look at statistics and you can see sexual assaults on children, you know, and various things. So I had mentioned Moses as an infant. His story is begins in Exodus chapter 2. As an infant, he avoided the edict of death put out by Pharaoh. That's Exodus chapter 2. In Genesis chapter 22, Isaac was about to be sacrificed by his own dad. Remember that story? You know, maybe the Lord spoke to him and said, "I want you to sacrifice your firstborn son." And that's kind of weird. You know, think about you being a young kid, a teenager even, and your dad's taking you up on this mountain and starts to tie you down and you're raising the blade. Dad, you're freaking me out here, you know, whoa. But he went willingly. And but that to me can be a type of a wound, plus the whole lying I mentioned before. Joseph had been mistreated, hated, and then sold into slavery by his brothers. If you're familiar with the story of Joseph, he went through quite a bit. You know, his dad, he was like daddy's little boy. He was the favorite amongst all the brothers. He had some gifting. He was talented. He was like a prodigy. You know, he was a gifted young little boy, and his brothers despised him for it. But his dad loved him. You know, he made that coat of many colors, you know, and he just bestowed on him a whole lot of love and attention, and his brothers hated him. And so they mistreated him. And at one point, you know, when he's tagging along, it's like, man, why is my brother following me? They just like, they took him and they beat him up and they threw him down in the well. And, you know, Benjamin's trying to save him. And one thing leads to another. And they're like, hey, let's sell him. So they sell him into slavery. And Joseph winds up down in Egypt. There's a story in 2 Samuel chapter 4. I'm going to go ahead and read this. It's about Mephibosheth, who is the son of Jonathan, who was the son of King Saul. And if you're familiar with that story, how Saul was the king and he sinned against the Lord, and so he lost the kingdom, and David was then anointed to be king, and it took some 16 odd years, I think, 14 to 16 years before he actually assumed the throne. So he had been anointed king, but he didn't go in there. He didn't try to take over from Saul. He didn't go in there. You know, he had every opportunity where he could have killed him, you know, in the cave, different places, but he didn't. And but Mephibosheth, 2 Samuel chapter 4 says, now when Ishbosheth, Saul's son Jonathan, heard that Abner had died in Hebron, he lost courage, and all Israel was disturbed. Saul's son had two men who were commanders of bands. The name of one was Baanah, and the name of the other Reshab, sons of Rimmon, the Beitharite of the sons of Benjamin. For Beeroth is also considered part of Benjamin. And the fled to Gittim and have been aliens there until this day. Now Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son crippled in his feet. He was 5 years old when the report of Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled. And it happened that in her hurry to flee, he fell and became lame. And his name was Mephibosheth. So here's this little boy. Tiny little boy, you know, very, you know, still growing and all that. And an event happens. And his caretaker hurries. I got to save this little boy. I got to save him. I got to get him out of here because they're going to come and try to kill him. And they, you know, she scoops him up and starts to run, and somehow she drops him. The boy falls, and his, you know, I'm assuming his ankles may have been broken, or a leg, you know, broken, and then he couldn't walk. They didn't set it correctly, so it was crooked. He couldn't walk right. And King David, having loved Jonathan, you know, those two were buddies. They were friends. They hung out together. Well, David had made a promise to his brother Jonathan and said, I'll take care of him. And so Mephibosheth was taken care of by King David. He was covered. And but the point is, the wound that happens is as a child, it can be physical. It can be a physical thing. It can be spiritual in the case of Moses. It can be a psychological and spiritual abuse, which is what I'm going to call, you know, for our purposes here, Abraham and Isaac, you know, though it's a foreshadowing of our God the Father sacrificing his own one and only son. In Leviticus chapters 18, 2 Kings, Numbers, Psalms, there's this teaching about Molech. And Molech means king, and he was a god of the Ammonites. He was a god of the Phoenicians and many, many different nations that were in the land of Canaan. Molech was one that required great sacrifice. And men and women would bring their children, and it was called passing through the fire. And some of it was just, you know, kind of like walking on hot coals or just being passed, you know, just through the fire. Others have said that it was actually sacrificing their children. They were sacrificing their children to this god Molech, putting him in the fire. In Leviticus chapter 18, it says, "You shall not give any of your offspring to offer them to Molech, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord." In 2 Kings, passing through doesn't refer to sacrificing or burning the child. It's just taking it, you know, taking the infant or the child and just passing him over the flames as a symbolic offering to this god Molech. In Numbers 31, it's the burning or sacrificing of the child. Psalm 106 talks about sacrifice of children to unnamed gods of Canaan. Jeremiah 7, Ezekiel 20 speaks out against this practice. And Jeremiah variously talks about sacrificing children to Baal. This was something that was common in ancient times. Sacrificing, actual child sacrifice. And we see it today. We see children being sacrificed all the time. Whether it's actually being, you know, kids being put to death, or being sacrificed by their parents or their families in a way of, well, you just wait over here, mom and dad are going to go play. You know what I mean? You understand what I mean? It's not a physical sacrifice, but it's just a letting the TV take care of them, letting them run through the neighborhood, letting the neighbors take care of them, letting, you know, society be responsible for the children instead of the parent being the parent. They're just sacrificing their kids. That's the point there. In Daniel chapter 1, it's the story about Daniel and his three friends. It says they were taken as children, separated from family. In Daniel 1, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. The Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some vessels of the house of God. And he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasury of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of his officials, to bring in some of the sons of Israel, including some of the royal family and of the nobles, youths in whom was no defect, who were good-looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, and who had the ability for serving in the king's court. And he ordered him to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. The king appointed for them a daily ration of the king's choice food and from the wine which he drank, and appointed that they should be educated 3 years, at the end of which they were to enter the king's personal service. Now among them, from the sons of Judah, were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Then the commander of the officials assigned new names to them, and to Daniel he assigned the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. So these young guys, you know, coming from royal family or noble lineage, were taken into captivity. They left the land of Judah, they left the land of praise, and they were taken into Babylon, into captivity. And they were indoctrinated with a completely different teaching. They were taught how to be Babylonian. They were given a different kind of food. And we know the story about when, you know, Daniel said, well, you know, let us eat vegetables. We don't want to eat what's there. We're going to eat what we want. And they became healthier and stronger and all that, just eating what they chose rather than what the king had put out for them. We know about the resistance, you know, when they refused to bow down to the idol of gold and they were put into the fiery furnace and they survived. We know the story of Daniel and how he was later on in his old age was put into the lion's den. Again, Jesus in Matthew chapter 2. Then when Herod saw that he had been tricked by the Magi, he became very enraged and sent and slew all the male children who were in Bethlehem and all its vicinity, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had determined from the Magi. Jesus was spared. The enemy, the devil, went, you know, through this edict of Herod to destroy, to slaughter infants and babies. Young children. In Mark chapter 9, there's a story about a child possessed by a demon. He used to throw himself into the fire. He was self-destructive. You know, in our culture today, we see where kids cut themselves, the practice of cutting. They're self-destructive. Here was this young boy who would throw himself into a fire, who had difficulty. Mom and dad couldn't control him, and he needed a healing. And it was Jesus was the one who came, because the disciples tried to. They tried to heal this young boy. And Jesus said, "Here, let me," and he prayed, and the child was healed. And they're like, "Why couldn't we do it?" And he said, "This one only comes out through prayer and fasting. This type of demon, this type of issue, this type of wounding only comes out through prayer and fasting." So you and I may have a wounding that we can't just get over it. Get over it. There's some wounding that we may have where we got to really work through it. There's got to be some prayer and fasting. There has to be some counseling. There has to be some talking. There has to be, you know, getting down to what happened. And for some, it can be rather quick. For others, it may be a lifelong journey of this healing process. You know, it may be living with it for something. There was the man born blind. Here's one who in the womb had a disease right away, and he was born blind. And Jesus healed him. We see time and time again where children are born, babies are born with physical issues. They're born with some disease. Or there's something genetic where they have cancer or something. I don't know how many of you see, you know, that commercial on TV where you can get the adobable blanket. You know, if you give just, you know, what is it, 69 cents a day, if you give to Shriners Hospitals for Children, you get this adobable blanket. You know, they're Shriners and St. Jude's, where they're helping to take care of these young children with no cost to the family. But these kids are born with crippling disease and limbs that are twisted and just all sorts of different things. So these wounds can happen. They can be physical. They can be spiritual. They can be psychological. They can be of a sexual nature. They can be put upon us by society. Just going to talk a little bit personally for myself. There was a time when I received my father wound. And if you could put my infant picture, this is me as a little baby. Yeah, I was such a cutie pie. What happened? Yeah, thanks. Aw. Yeah. I don't know what happened. But if you see, like a lot of babies, where, you know, there's the big smile and the happy looking eyes and just, you know, wow, just so happy. And that continued on. You know, I'm still happy here, but this was my kindergarten picture. And in kindergarten, a child's whole world changes, right? When you go to kindergarten, when you go to public school, you leave the safety of, you know, your play area, your nap time area, the place where you eat, you know, the place where you watch cartoons, and, you know, all this, the safety of your home, and you go to this school where there's people you don't know. There's some adult up in the front that you don't know, and still inquisitive, still, you know, maybe dumbfounded, you know, but not yet wounded. And if you go to the next picture, I had become comfortable by first grade. Okay, I'm back to myself. I'm really happy, just excited. I love school. I just wanted to go. I wanted to be there. I was still the child that my mother told me about. When I was very small, we'd go into the Walgreens drugstore in our neighborhood, and I would just walk up to a stranger and say, "Hi, how are you? My name is Keith Randall Coughlin. I live at 1635 Walnut Avenue. You know, I'm 4 years old. You know, my telephone number is area code 312-289-1220. You know, and tell them what I like and just talk to people. And that child has kind of come back. When Tammy and I go out, you know, I talk to people in Walmart. I talk to the checker there. I talk to people, you know, the gas pumps. I do the no-no and talk to other guys in the bathroom. You know, I do. And it's like, I talk to people when I get on the elevator, you know. It's like, hey, man, thanks for stopping to pick us up. You know, that sort of thing. Just, and, you know, how y'all doing? And just the pleasantries. The next one, I'm still happy. You know, still got the smile, still happy, still got the wonder in the eyes. And then this was second grade. And then third grade. Can you see the eyes? There's this loss in me, just this sense of loss. And I was hit hard with the reality of life at that time. And that, you know, some of you already know, that was when I found out that my father was not in a hospital, but he was in Joliet State Penitentiary. He was in prison. My mother had lied to me. My family had lied to me. I no longer had trust of adults. I no longer trusted adults. That was where my problem with authority began, was right there. We were out playing basketball. We had gone to visit my dad, and it was the custom on every Saturday. You know, we'd ride out to Joliet, and Mom would take lunch, and we go. There was a place called The Farm in conjunction with Joliet. And we go out there, and, you know, I'd spend time with my dad and my cousins and I, and maybe some other kids would be playing basketball or football or something. This one particular afternoon, we're there and playing basketball. And the ball got away, and I went out to go pick it up. And I can just remember this like it was yesterday. I run out to the end of the basketball court into the grass, and I bend down to pick up the ball, and I hear another little boy ask his dad. He says, "Dad, when are you getting out of prison?" And I dropped the ball, and I looked up, and at that moment, I saw the bars on the windows. I looked around, and I saw the fence and the guard tower and the razor wire and these white bricks. And then it all started hitting me like a flood, you know, from 5 years old, going in and being patted down, and having to give my name and my birthday as a five-year-old, you know, and then walking into one area, bars closing behind me, going into another area, bars closing behind me, and then taken into the down this long corridor into a place where I got to see my dad and talk to him on a phone. It just all came just like a flood. And I hated my mother. And I hated my uncles and my aunts. My grandfather disowned my dad. So I had this whole, his side of the family disowned him. I couldn't tell my mother's side of the family. I was like, keep this a secret. This is a family secret. So that was where my wound was. Now, we're going to go and look at this chart, if we could. Estimated child fatalities. Can you go to the other one? Okay. These are statistics taken from, I want to say 2013, maybe 14. Can't remember offhand. But these are types of child abuse in our country, in just the United States. And it is remarkable. 78.3% child neglect. Kids are just left alone. That's over three-quarters of our kids in the United States just left alone, being neglected. You know, we hear it all the time where, you know, mom goes in, you know, or dad leaves, and, you know, somehow they find out the kids are living in squalor. You know, there's just bad stuff going on. But physical abuse, kids being beaten, being, you know, abused in some way, shape, or form physically. Sexual abuse, nearly 10% of kids have been sexually abused. You know, some of this may hit home for us. Psychological maltreatment in 8%. That's one of those things where, you know what, you are no good. You are worthless, you are no good, you will never amount to anything, you're no son of mine. You know, your daughter, you know, the way that you dress, the way that you go out, the way that you do that stuff, that, you know, whatever it is. And the fighting that takes place, the psychological abuse. Anthony Campolo does a teaching, and he talks about the psychology and aspects of psychology that says, whatever you believe, whatever you perceive the most important person in your life believes about you is what you're going to believe about yourself. And what that means is, like, let's say that it is your dad is the most important person in your life, just for an example. Let's say he's the most important person. What you perceive that he thinks about you, he may love you with all his heart, but because he's a wounded man who was a wounded child who probably received the same kind of crap from his dad, wants you to do a good job. He wants you to be better than he is. So he pushes. And he said, he'll say, don't act stupid. My dad said that to me. Don't act stupid. I said, Dad, I'm not acting. You know, just, I'm a kid. But don't. That's the psychological thing. And then medical neglect. Just, you know, if a kid is sick, you know, I went to school one morning and, you know, getting ready, and I told my mom, I'm like, Mom, I don't feel good. I don't feel good. I don't want to go to school. She's like, no, you're going to school. Get on that bus. And got on the bus, and I just didn't feel good. I'm like, oh. I waited as long as I could. I raised my hand. I think at this one I was probably in second grade. Yeah, Mrs. Riebenstorf, I raised my hand, and she didn't call on me. And I was like, I can't wait. I got up, and I just walked out of the room and went to the bathroom and just retched, just let it all out. And I'm in there, and she, you know, she's like, this is uncharacteristic for Keith to just get up and walk out. So she followed me, you know, and she's like, oh, my. So Mr. Panowski, Pienkowski, the principal, wound up giving me a ride home. He called my mother at work and said, Keith is sick. You know, can we meet at the house? And he put me in the back seat with a box, you know, just in case I got sick again. And but my mother felt so bad. She's like, oh, no. You know, but that's not like real neglect. You know, it's if the kid is really sick, injured, and the parent just doesn't take care of them. Then there's others. Then the next one, the next slide has to do with the fatalities. Estimated child fatalities per day attributed to child maltreatment. And it goes through the years, each one, all these statistics. And I don't know what the correlation is, you know, why it rises and falls, the fluctuation. But you look over here in 2009, per day, there was nearly 5 child fatalities in the United States per day because of maltreatment. That's ridiculous. So I believe every single one of us in this room have experienced this kind of a wound. And I don't know how deep something like this might be for some of us. If your wound was, you know, just kind of a superficial thing, and it's like, it didn't really, it bugged me, and, you know, I've kind of come to grips with it. Or if it was something that was really deep, you know, abandonment. I don't know how many of you have maybe suffered, you know, abandonment issues. You know, somebody close to you when you're a child dies, and you just feel abandoned. Or the father just ups and leaves. You know, when my grandparents disowned my dad, I never saw him again after I was 5 years old. Never saw them again. Didn't see my uncle, my dad's brother, until it was after Tammy and I got married that I saw him. So from 1970 to 1989, do the math. I can't do math. That's a lot of work right there. You know, but and I hated my grandfather up until about 10 years ago. And that was when my mom died. I sat down with my Uncle Gary and talked and found out, you know, that Leo had, you know, just repented and wished he hadn't have done that, but he was, you know, acting stupid. And, you know, I said, man, I wish I would have known. I wish I could have talked to him then. But so wherever you've been wounded, if you have friends or family members that have experienced that wounding, there's a time and a place. And some of this stuff only comes out through prayer and fasting. Tammy and I were at a worship leader's retreat. don't remember how many years ago now. If it was 08, 09, 10, 11. But one of the old-time worship leaders, songwriters from the vineyard out in California back in the old days, Terry Butler was there, and he shared his testimony. Terry Butler has written a number of songs that we've done here, and they're done in vineyards all around. But he shared his testimony about losing his brother. His brother drowned. And that really affected him deeply, which, I mean, it would, right? You know, you lose a sibling on a family outing. You know, they had gone camping, and they were out there in the, I just think it was in the river or something, and he drowned. They couldn't save him. And that was just, you know, the big wound for Terry. And he just opened up and he began to share and how he had been diagnosed with, you know, he was manic depressive through all that stuff and was diagnosed with bipolar. And as he was sharing his testimony and talking about his mood swings, you know, this deep, dark depression, you know, this suicidal tendencies, and then this great manic, you know, just happy. And Tammy reached over and she grabbed my leg, and it was like, I said, I know. So we came home and I talked to my doctor, and it was like, I need to get through this stuff. I need to start working on this. You know, I got some stuff to talk about. And so I go to a counselor. You know, I go and I talk and say, this is how the week is going. This is how the last 2 weeks have been. And it is really good to get that stuff out there. And there's no shame in it. If you need to talk to somebody, talk to somebody. You know, if you need it on a professional level, do it on a professional level. You know, there is no shame whatsoever in it. And so I know I kind of rambled on. And I'll just go ahead and say it's just because it's a tough thing for me to talk about. You know, to kind of bear it out to some strangers, you know, people who don't know me, people I don't know, but we're all wounded, and everybody that we come into contact with on this planet in our life has been wounded. Some have dealt with it. Some just spew out hatred and bitterness and anger and rage. Some people try to cover it up. Some people try to self-medicate, you know. So, Father, I just thank you so much that you are concerned for us, that you desire that we once again become that little child so that we can see your kingdom, the power, the strength, the healing, the glory of your kingdom in our lives. I pray that you would continue your healing in each one of us here this morning. However deep that you need to go within us, that when we're alone with you, that you would bring that stuff up and that we could just pour it out to you. If anyone here needs that counseling, that professional stuff, I just ask that you would encourage them to take that step, that there'd be no shame. We know that the enemy, our enemy, the devil, goes about like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. And he goes after the young, he goes after the infants, he goes after us when we're kids, and he is relentless. And he'll bring that stuff up. Lord, whatever kind of an abuse it was, whatever kind of maltreatment it may have been that we received, that psychological, emotional, physical, sexual, whatever, spiritual, just pray that you would reach deep and bring healing. And of course, if y'all want to talk, if you want to talk to me, or if you need to talk to somebody else that's here, you know, just come on, let's talk. And if you need some names of people you can go to, I can give you names of people you can go to for that kind of counseling, biblical, solid counseling, and people that'll help you work through this stuff. You're not out there alone. You're not out there alone. So, God bless you all. I don't mean for it to be a real downer, but it's a tough topic. It really is a tough topic. So, anyway. Any comments, questions?